of course, the legendary opening riff of Johnny B. Goode, Chuck Berry's classic. The Johnny referred to in the title is Johnny Johnson, who was the St. Louisan with the band who invited Chuck Berry to join it, and rock and roll history was made. Johnny stayed with him as a keyboard player for a long, long time. And then the Johnny Johnson story took some twists and turns. Johnny is going to be the subject of a tribute at the Argosy Alton Bell Casino this Saturday night, the 21st. And the reason for that tribute to Johnny is to raise money for a documentary that Art Holliday is making about Johnny Johnson. You know Art, of course, from his years at Channel 5, where he is on the morning news and also on, what do you call it, News 5 at Noon? What's the official title of that?
News Channel 5 at Noon.
News Channel 5 at Noon.
And today at 10, we have a 30-minute show at 10 a.m.
So this is actually nap time for Art, but he's agreed to stay awake this afternoon to join us live in the studio here on the Paul Harris Show. It's nice to have you.
Thank you for the invitation.
It's my pleasure. Art and I have been emailing back and forth about this project because I was a big supporter of getting Johnny into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame several years ago, and actually had the pleasure one day of having him on the show with a keyboard, playing some boogie-woogie and some rock and roll, and just a sweet guy. And tell me how you got interested in Johnny and his work.
It was kind of a fluke. I was sitting at my desk one day, and one of my colleagues, Tony Chambers, one of our very talented photography staff at KSDK, he's also a local musician in a band, and a friend of his, Gene Ackman, was producing a CD with Johnny several years ago, a CD that Bruce Hornsby and Bonnie Raitt and Johnny Rivers were involved with. And he said, you know, I know you're into documentaries. Maybe you want to think about doing a documentary on Johnny Johnson. And I was finishing another documentary, which means I was exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
So the last thing I was thinking about was doing another documentary. And then I started thinking, you know, when's the next time you're going to get to do a film about someone who was there at the beginning of rock and roll? And so I met with Johnny and Francis at their home. And I said, well, what do you want to let me tell your life story? And said, well, we don't want anything. We just want Johnny's story to get out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 4 years ago.
We lost Johnny a couple of years ago, of
we
course.
Did.
And by the way, Gene Ackman, who Art mentioned, is a member of the Butch Wax and the Hollywoods.
Correct.
And for a couple of years, if you went and saw Butch Wax and the Hollywoods, every once in a while, Johnny Johnson would be there on keyboards. A nice little surprise. And they did a big party for him mm-hmm. in Keener Plaza for his birthday several years ago. And so Gene has been a big factor in the resurgence of Johnny in the 21st century. You actually have in front of you there the petition that was sent to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that was signed by some pretty big names in the business, wasn't it?
You know, the first time I saw this document, it just about blew me away. This was a part of the effort to get Johnny into the Hall of Fame. The first signature is Keith Richards, followed by Eric Clapton, Dick Clark, Bo Diddley, Buddy Guy, John Lee Hooker, Little Richard, Etta James, Bob Weir, Charles Brown, Jimmy Rogers, John Sebastian, Rod Stewart, and Richard Young of the Kentucky Headhunters.
Yeah, that's a pretty good list of people to have behind you.
Well, that was the starting point for the people that I wanted to interview. I wanted to interview as many people on this list as I could, and I wanted to get as many people who were involved with Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, the seminal rock documentary that was shot at the Fox Theater in 1985, and I've had pretty good success. I've had the last couple of years, people have just jumped on board this project and made time to sit down and talk about Johnny Johnson.
Now, what's that like? You call up Eric Clapton, you finally get through to Eric Clapton's people, and you tell them you're doing a documentary. And I'm guessing at first they go, all right, well, Eric's very busy. And then you tell them what the documentary is about. Does that change their mind?
Well, first of all, you never even know if your message gets through or not. I'm convinced that on many occasions, the person that I was trying to get an interview with never even got the message.
Mm-hmm.
I've been chasing Eric Clapton for about 3 years, and I told him that when he sat down. I said, you had no way of knowing this, but I've been trying to talk to you for 3 years, and he got this big smile on his face like, yeah,
it's like that.
I make it difficult for people to get in touch with me because I'm Eric Clapton.
Right.
But I've been telling people for the last couple of months, I was in New York to do a series of interviews. When you open your hotel room door and Eric Clapton's standing there.
Wow, what a moment.
That's a pretty cool day.
Yes.
And I've had so many moments like that, and I call it the karma of Johnny Johnson. Everything that he put out because of his music, and maybe even more so because of his personality. He is universally loved by all of these people. That's the reason that they're coming to this project. It hasn't, you know, they in St. Louis, a few people know who I am. Outside of that, none of these people knew who I was, but they make time in between their sound check and their concerts, like Joe Perry of Aerosmith did and Bruce Hornsby did this weekend. They invite me, like Taylor Hackford, the movie director, invited me to his home in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm looking out my hotel room at the Hollywood Hills, you know, that famous sign on the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, man, this is the coolest project. And the cool factor just keeps going up and up and up.
Are you doing this on digital video? You're just carrying a camera around yourself, or do you have a crew?
Both. The majority of it is the stuff that I shoot is primarily talking heads, which is relatively easy to set up. I know a little bit about lighting and that sort of thing. Early on, I took a crew to Fairmont, West Virginia, which is Johnny's hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a jazz and blues festival there that's named after him. And as it turned out, he was celebrating his 80th and final birthday. We didn't know that at the time.
Right.
So Johnny's return to his hometown is kind of the framework for the whole documentary, because he had most of his family there, daughters, grandkids, great-grandkids. A lot of them had never seen him perform before.
Mm.
And he was visibly thrilled to be there. Of course, anytime Johnny was sitting in front of a keyboard, he was
a happy man, yeah.
But having his family there and returning home as a conquering hero with billboards and front page newspaper ads and radio spots, it was a great day for him. People kept coming up to him and wishing him a happy birthday. And I actually caught a live radio interview that he did with Pat St. John of Sirius Radio, who's a huge Johnny fan. He called him to wish him a happy birthday. And I happened to have a wireless mic on him. Johnny was sitting in the back seat of a car, mm-hmm. just kind of resting. And all of a sudden, here comes this phone call from New York. And later on, when I interviewed Pat St. John, he gave me the recording, the actual recording. So I already had Johnny's audio. And so that's a small moment in the film as well.
That's terrific.
And Art, I have to ask you, because when I interviewed him, had that pleasure along with Charles Brennan about 10 years ago, mm-hmm. a live audience here, I was struck. You know, you hear the history. I'd never met him before. And you hear what this man did. And when he came in front of the audience of KMOX listeners, he could not have been more down to earth,
yeah.
almost shy, almost like, I know I've done these things, but why are you people making this big deal about me? I mean, I was sort of taken aback by that.
Johnny Johnson had zero interest in trying to impress people, and he easily could. I mean, he could tell some of the greatest stories, you know, but all he wanted to do was play.
Yeah.
He got, I think, from my experience with him, he got the same amount of enjoyment playing with Butch Wax and the Hollywoods or other local performers as he did playing with Eric Clapton or the Rolling Stones. He just liked to play.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the good news is that he was a marvelous player and he gave us so much joy with his music. The bad news for him personally is that if his personality had been a little different,
right.
he probably would have been a much wealthier man.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that kind of gets to the essence of Johnny Johnson. The money wasn't the motivating factor for mm-hmm. him. He was born to play the piano, and he did.
We'll talk more about Johnny Johnson with Art Holliday from News Channel 5. You can find out about the movie by going to johnnybegood.net. And if you're interested in going to the fundraiser to help put a few dollars into this effort of arts, you can go to Argosy Alton Bell Casino this Saturday night. You can get tickets by calling 800-711-4263. And there's more information on that on johnnybegood.net as well.
Now, I was walking down the street just the other day when two fine-looking women folk happened to walk my way. Now, one said, "Something stinks." The other one said, "You right." Then I started slipping and sliding, and I knew something wasn't right.
Step in what? Step in what?
Johnny Johnson.
Step in what?
from his Johnny B. Bad album from, what, about 5 or 6 years ago, Art? Somewhere in that range? Maybe even 4 years ago?
A little bit longer than that. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Keith Richards was the producer and played guitar on that one.
Talking with Art Holliday from News Channel 5, who's working on a documentary called Johnny B. Good that'll be out sometime, what do you think, a year or two? What's your release date? Do you have one?
You know, my people ask me that all the time, and I wish I had a better answer.
Well, if you just quit your TV job and concentrate on something important.
Well, that's problem. it's not really a problem. It's just the way things are.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so when you're doing something in part-time hours, obviously it takes longer. I can't do the documentary without Keith Richards, who is, I don't know if he's elusive or if his handlers are making him elusive.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do an interview. I just don't know when.
As soon as he gets down from the palm tree.
Exactly. But he's Johnny's biggest supporter, and, you know, it was his statements in Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll that kind of caused a lot of people to reevaluate Johnny Johnson and his role in rock and roll history and the Chuck Berry sound.
And what Art's referring to there is in that movie, that great Taylor Hackford documentary about Chuck's 60th birthday, which was celebrated at the Fabulous Fox here in St. Louis, and Johnny's on stage, and Keith's on stage, and Clapton's on stage, and Etta James and Linda Ronstadt and Robert Cray, mm-hmm. and it just goes on and on and on. In that movie, Keith Richards talks about how the music that you heard in the early days of rock and roll played by Chuck Berry were actually Johnny Johnson piano riffs in a piano key that Chuck adapted to the guitar, and so the roots of Chuck Berry's roots rock and roll go right to his friend Johnny Johnson. Now, when I say friend there, I put that in quotes, mm-hmm. because there was a rift between the two of them, particularly over money. And Johnny ended up suing Chuck for back royalties and didn't win. Was there ever a settlement there? And tell me what you know of that part of that story.
Well, there was no settlement. Johnny did sue. The case was ultimately thrown out because of statute of limitations issues. Too much time had passed.
Mm-hmm.
That was a two-part question.
The relationship between the two of them and how it was affected by the lawsuit.
Well, I think by all accounts, and I have not spoken to Chuck Berry directly about this issue, but I'm told, and you know, I did speak to Johnny about it, they had made their peace. They actually played together after the lawsuit was thrown out, and the judge asked them to go into mediation and try to reach a settlement, and for whatever reason, they didn't. But I think I'm told that Chuck wasn't mad at Johnny because he sensed that it wasn't Johnny's idea. It was people around Johnny who suggested that. Mm-hmm. And from many of the interviews that I've conducted, that seems to be the case. I don't know how significant that is at this point. I think it would have been a fascinating trial. And interestingly enough, and you may be familiar with this since you're a music fan, you may recall, I think certainly within the last year, there was a case over in England where the organ player for Procol Harum,
mm-hmm.
Who played that great solo on Whiter Shade of Pale,
mm-hmm.
a very significant part of the reason that song was such a hit, he sued, claiming that, you know, that was such an integral part of that sound and so instrumental to its success that he should have received a co-writing credit.
Right.
And he won. That's basically the claim that Johnny's attorneys were trying to make, that, you know, they wrote the songs together, they collaborated on the songs together, and the sound was integral. We'll never know how the judge would have decided, because it never made it to a courtroom. But it's a fascinating chapter of a fascinating relationship.
Yep.
The sad part for music fans is that Johnny Johnson and Chuck Berry didn't play together more than they did. They separated, and clearly they brought out the best in each other. And if I could say one thing, I'm not going to mention names or anything like that, but people have tried to take some shots at this project, suggesting that I'm trying to rewrite history. And I'm trying to be as accurate as I can.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not censoring anyone. I hope if Chuck Berry or anyone close to him is listening that he will sit down and do an interview with me. I would love to talk to him about his music and his music legacy. I am not seeking to trash Chuck Berry.
Mm-hmm.
Let me put that on the record right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's out there, historically speaking, is out there. Will some of that be touched on in the documentary? Probably. But this is Johnny Johnson's story. You can't tell Johnny's story without talking about Chuck Berry. They are, will forever be intertwined.
Yep.
And I think from my standpoint, Johnny is extremely deserving of a film like this because he was one of the handful of people who was there at the beginning of rock and roll.
Is Chuck refusing to talk to you because you won't cut him a check?
You know, I don't know. We haven't gotten that far.
Okay. Because, you know, Taylor Hackford says in the extras on the DVD that finally came out of Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, that even on the day that they were going to start some of the filming of that movie, Chuck said, wait a second, I need more money. Now, that's what Taylor Hackford says. I don't know personally what that story is, but Chuck always had that attitude of, when he showed up for a gig, give me my money in cash before I go on stage. Have his people or anybody said, Art Holiday, give me some cash, give me a bag full of cash, and I'll talk to you about my life with Johnny Johnson?
Well, here's where my contact began with Chuck Berry. Johnny and I, before Johnny died, went out to Blueberry Hill one night when Chuck was performing, and he was kind enough to talk to us after his performance. Johnny introduced me and, you know, said that I was doing a documentary about him, and Chuck asked me what I wanted. I said, well, I'd like three things. I'd like to interview you. I'd like to be able to license some of your music for use in the film, and I'd like for you and Johnny to perform Johnny Be Good together and let me videotape it and use it in the film. And he said, put it in writing. So I did, and with the help of an attorney, and he sent word back to his attorney that he wanted script approval. And, he that night he gave me his contact information. I contacted him several times, and that's the last time I've spoken to him.
Mm.
So
that's where things stand. Art Holiday from News Channel 5. The documentary is called Johnny Be Good. That's what he's working on. There's a fundraiser to help put together some dough to make this thing. It'll be Saturday night at the Argosy Alton Bell Casino, and there'll be a lot of people there who are playing some of Johnny's great music, and you're invited to be there. One of his proteges, Donya Oxford, is going to be playing. If you want information, go to Art's website, johnnybegood.net. That's Johnny Johnson doing what he did best. That great boogie-woogie rock and roll piano. One of the originators of the form. You think that's safe to say?
Chuck Lavelle, the Rolling Stone, said, as far as he's concerned, that Johnny Johnson is the father of rock and roll piano.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to say it. I let all these other stars say it.
This is Art Holiday from News Channel 5, who's been working for a couple of years now on a documentary called Johnny Be Good. When he's not on TV, he's frolicking all around the country, interviewing people. You mentioned earlier that you went to Taylor Hackford's house and you talked to him about the movie. And you actually have talked to people like Bonnie Raitt and Bruce Hornsby. You talked to Paul Schaefer from The Letterman Show and Joe Perry of Aerosmith. And on the list, you've got Bo Diddley, who was on that petition that we mentioned earlier,
right,
to get Chuck, to get Johnny into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And he's in as a sideman, which was almost a new category that was created for people like him. Bo was one of those guys who was also there at the beginning. What was his relationship like with Johnny?
Well, he was close with Johnny. They performed together, and I think probably like maybe 4 or 5 months before Johnny died, they performed together at the Argosy.
Mm-hmm.
And they were actually represented by the same company, TCI in New York. They were managed by the same people. So they were friends. My interview with Bo Diddley was interesting because, you know, I probably rolled about maybe 20, 25 minutes of tape on it, and there was probably maybe a minute of it was about Johnny. And Bo is a very bitter man, and he was venting that day.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting too. But, you know, clearly, you know, if you look at the context of his comments, you know, he came along at a time when it was very difficult for black artists to make it. And, you know, he was venting on Elvis Presley and Pat Boone and, you know, just kind of going off.
But, well, even in the movie Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, in the extras disc, there's a thing with Chuck Berry and Little Richard and Bo Diddley. And they talk about how, you know, Pat Boone coming along and doing wop, bop, loo, bop, wop, bam, boom. That version, that completely soulless version of Tutti Frutti just cut them to the core.
That was hot, wasn't it?
Well, you know.
That was a smoking version of it.
Certainly was. You know, if it was originally done in 4/4 time, Pat took it to 1/1. but that's what was happening because, you know, if you were a black rock and roller in the 50s, there were a lot of white radio stations in this country who would not play your music. And these guys were really kept down in that way while white artists were covering their music without their permission. And there's a huge ripoff story that's there as well. But let's talk about some of the people who were influenced him. Bonnie Raitt, just a terrific performer, who also has performed with Johnny, right?
She has performed with Johnny. She was interesting story about Bonnie Raitt. I chased Bonnie for about a year, and her handlers never said no. They just said, she's busy doing this, and she's busy doing this. And check back with us in 3 months, and check back with us in 2 months. And finally, Bonnie was being sought by 5 different documentary projects, mine being one of them. And so they decided to sit her down in front of a camera out in California. Every project would submit their questions, and then they sent me a copy of her answers.
Oh, so you weren't even there.
I wasn't even there. And then probably about maybe 6-7 weeks later, she was in town, and Francis Johnson and I went out to see the concert and got to meet her backstage and say thank you. I was hoping to interview her in person, but that was their solution because, you know, Bonnie is a huge supporter of the R&B artists and blues artists that paved the way. And so she's a highly sought after interview. So I understand that. And that was cool. As long as I got the interview, I didn't really care
about stuff for the film.
About the specifics.
Yeah.
And, you know, and her great quote, she goes, he's as close to being a founding father of rock and roll as we have, and they ought to put him on a stamp. Doesn't get much better than that.
No, that's pretty good. He is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. What's your relationship like with the people who run that out in Cleveland?
They blew me away, honestly. I interviewed Terry Stewart, the president and CEO of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, last summer. And after the interview was over, I said, you know, does the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ever sponsor documentaries? Because, you know, a lot of this film is going to deal with a variety of issues specifically directed at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Johnny said that was the best night of his life and, you know, et cetera. And, you know, and he said, well, you know, we can't really do that, but here's what we can do. You know, we've got footage of Johnny performing here. We can make that available. When your documentary is done, we can host a showing. And they also offered to let me use their venue for a fundraiser. You know, so
very nice.
I didn't see that one coming either. So I'm hoping somehow I can figure out, you know, how to do a fundraiser at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That would be pretty cool.
That would be pretty cool. And you're also tied in with VH1 somehow.
Well, I'm donating money. I wanted to use some of the money that I raised. And when the documentary was done, some of them, if it finds an audience and makes some money, that I could do something to kind of pay tribute to Johnny. And I thought at first I was going to do maybe a scholarship at a local university. And then recently I met the president of the Save the Music Foundation, the VH1 Save the Music Foundation, which, you know, if you're not familiar with that foundation, it's celebrating its 10th year. And they raise money and donate money to elementary schools all over the country, including St. Louis, to buy musical instruments for elementary school students because a lot of music programs have been cut for budgetary reasons.
Yep.
And I thought, what cooler way to use this documentary than to raise money to buy musical instruments? You know, Johnny loved talking to little kids about music and everything, and I thought, man, that's just about perfect. So I've already made one donation, and as I continue to raise money for the film, and then when it's done, I hope to continue to be able to donate. I just think that's a really cool way to give back.
Art will be there at the tribute to Johnny Johnson with the Johnny Johnson Band and lots of local folks who knew him playing his music this Saturday night at Argosy's Music Hall in the Argosy Alton Bell Casino. And if you want information on all of this, go to johnnybegood.net. That's J-O-H-N-N-I-E, the way he spelled his name, mm-hmm. johnnybegood.net, and find out more about the movie. Art, it's a pleasure having you come in here and talk about this. And as the process moves along, stay in touch. You and I have been emailing already.
Yes, we have.
Stay in touch. Keep me posted because I want to help you out as much as I can with this.
I appreciate it, Paul, very much. This has become such a community event. I appreciate forums like this to reach your audience. The Higher Education Channel of St. Louis is helping me raise funds, and the documentary will actually show there as part of a grant that I got from University City. You know, I've had support from people like Joe Edwards and Pat Hagen, who let me use the pageant to shoot some footage of Johnny. You know, so St. Louis loves Johnny Johnson. He loves St. Louis. And, you know, thank you for the help.
Great stuff. Art Holliday from News Channel 5 and johnnybegood.net here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.